Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're sitting here in Arkansas waiting to see if we're going to have a bad snowstorm tonight or not. You know, as you know, I was out of the country in Australia, New Zealand, where it was going into summer. And it seems funny, I still feel like I'm in a time warp. Because I come back and here it's winter and it's heading for Christmas. I feel like I lost 2 or 3 months in there. Have no idea what's going on here. But they are predicting some bad snow, so we're just going to see what's going to happen. And I sit up here on my mountaintop wondering whether I'd be able to get out or not. Doesn't matter except when I have clients coming in. And I've got someone Monday. So that's the only thing. I don't have to worry about traveling. No more trips until, I think, the end of January or the 1st of February. Then I'll be on the road again. So this is my time to hibernate, and I'm working on the convoluted tree, which everybody, everywhere I go, keeps saying, when is that book going to come out? Well, I promise you, I'm working on the final parts of it now. I took it with me on my trip to Australia, and we're doing the final editing. And we're expecting it to go to the printers within the next few weeks, as soon as I get all the little last parts tied up. We are doing a pre-publication special on it right now, where you can get the price at a reduced price before it hits the bookstores and before we have it on our regular website. But we're doing a pre-publication special, and the orders have been pouring in the whole time I've been gone. So if you check on my website, you'll be able to see the price, because I don't know off the top of my head, but I do know it's several dollars cheaper than it will be whenever it finally does come out, because we're still trying to estimate how many pages and everything that it's going to be. But if you check my website, it's www.OzarkMountain, which is the name of my company, but it's abbreviated. OzarkMt.com. And for those of you that are listening in other countries, it's OzarkMt.com. And when I was over there, a lot of the people said in Australia they do listen to the show. But if you check the website, you can find out about the special prices, or you can call our 800 number, which is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045 to find out about the advance pre-publication orders for the new book. Let me give out the number here for the radio station here if anybody wants to call in tonight. The toll-free number for here is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. That's the 800 number in case anybody wants to call in and ask any questions. Okay. I want to backtrack a little bit. Last week was the first show I'd done in about 9 weeks because, you know, I was out of the country. Then I came home for Thanksgiving and was off again on a cruise to the Caribbean. And I was still getting over jet lag when I was on the air last week. And I was talking about all the places we went to. There was one little thing I forgot to mention, and I wanted to finish it before I go into the rest of the show. I told you that when I was in Queenstown in New Zealand, we had 2 earthquakes while I was there. And the one was over 7 point something on the Richter scale, and that hit in the middle of the night. Then the next morning, I was at the airport getting ready to leave when the aftershocks came in, and it was over 6 point something, and the whole airport was shaking. I did mention that, but I forgot to say was when I got home, when we went on the cruise down into the Caribbean, and we were in San Juan and St. Thomas, and we were in St. Martin. We had an earthquake there. And I forgot to mention that last week. I said, this is so strange. What are they doing? Are the earthquakes following me around the globe or what? But it happened on the island. It was over 7 point something on the Richter scale. But I had just left the island and got back on the ship, so I didn't feel it. But the people who came on back after me, when they got back on the ship, they kept saying, did you know about the earthquake? And they said the stores and everything were shaking. Things were falling off the shelves. And the natives there are not, they said they're not used to earthquakes. And they didn't know what was happening. And they were crying. And they were really afraid. But some of the people who were telling me this have live in California. And they said they're used to that. But apparently it doesn't happen very often down in that part of the world. But I said, well, I was back on the ship, so I didn't feel it. And they said, that's the best place to be when you're having an earthquake anyway. So I thought it was funny. Are the earthquakes following me around the globe or what? I almost expected when I got back home to Arkansas, we'd have one here. Because where I live, we sit where the St. New Madrid Fault is. People think it goes down the coast, you know, of Missouri on down into Arkansas on the east side, but it has another fault line that runs all the way across the top of Arkansas. And it runs right through the mountain where I live and all the way over to Fayetteville, where the university and the hospital sit on top of the earthquake fault line over there. So I was almost expecting to get back here and have something happen here. So I don't know what that's trying to tell us. It has to do with global change or what it is. But anyway, it's a little unusual to be in 3 of them in just a matter of a few weeks. Okay, now I've been trying to think about what to talk about. I don't have a guest tonight, but there's many of my books that I have never brought up and never talked about because there's been so much time that's gone by. So I kept thinking about going over some of the subject matter that I haven't talked about in the other programs. As a lot of you know, in addition to my hypnosis work, my therapy work, my classes, everything that I do with hypnosis, I also am a UFO investigator. I've been doing that for 20 years also. In addition to all the other things that I'm involved with the therapy and everything else. They called me in about 20 years ago to be a UFO investigator. At that time, there was nobody in this area in Arkansas that they could ask to do these things. A MUFON was one of the first ones to ask me to take help with this because they said they had a woman who they had said that she thought she'd been abducted, and they had a psychologist come in and work with her. You got to remember, Arkansas, there isn't very much around here. People aren't into these things at all. Well, the psychologist got her in trance, and he got her in on board a craft and was starting into the experience. But then he just woke her up. Because he said he didn't know what questions to ask. He didn't know what to do with it. So he just brought her out of trance. That's the problem if it's not in the book. You know what I mean by the book, what they're taught. They don't know what to do with it. So he just pulled her out of trance and stopped the session. To me, that's the worst possible thing you could ever do to anyone when they're hypnotized. And also, it's very bad therapy. You get somebody into something, and you're starting to work with them, and then you just jerk them out of it. So anyway, they asked me if I would come in and see this woman and start working on some cases with them. Now, this was 20 years ago. The only thing I've been doing at that time was the past life therapy, the past life regressions. And they said, well, you've been involved in the bizarre for so long, we don't think this will frighten you. So that was true. So they wanted to know if I would do it. And the main one who was wanting to work with me and asking me to do this was Lou Farish. And I've had him on my show before. He's a very old friend of mine, and he puts on the UFO conference in Eureka Springs every year, and I help with that. So we've been friends for a long time, and it all started back 20 years ago when they were asking me to work with UFO cases. And that very first one was, they had 25 investigators. It was a state MUFON meeting of state directors, and they wanted me to put this woman under in front of the entire group and let them ask questions and see how it was all done. And at that time, I had no idea whether I could make this work or not, because as I said, I'm used to taking people into other lives. In order to make it work, I was going to have to change my technique and keep them in this lifetime. Well, they didn't know that I had not done this before, so I said it's like a goldfish bowl conditions, because we didn't know the woman, she didn't know us, and it was more or less putting her on display, and I didn't know if maybe she wouldn't even go under. So it was a very touchy situation. But as it all worked out, she did go. We had a very interesting session. They got to ask questions. They got to see what was happening when you do this. And it was the beginning of my career in that part of doing UFO investigations. So that's been 20 years I've been doing this. Along the way, I have gotten such wonderful information. And a lot of it showed to me, was now I'm lecturing in all the UFO conferences all over the world, but in those early days, I was still exploring. But I've had so many investigators who tell me they're into the negativity, they're into what they consider the evil and the horror and all of that, and a lot of them don't agree with my work at all, because they say, I have not found the truth, because I'm not finding this negativity. I said, that's because it does not exist. In the 20 years I've been doing this, the information I've been able to put together, it's all positive. The reason why a lot of the other investigators are finding things that are negative is because they're not doing their hypnotic work correctly. You see, now, they are the ones I'm speaking about tonight. When I usually say they, I mean the subconscious mind that I speak with when I'm working with therapy. But also, when I began doing this work, the ETs began speaking to me directly through the people I was working with. And in the early days when I did it, they came through two or three times and they would say, yes, she's the one we're supposed to give the information to. And they said, why just give it to anyone? Give it to someone who will do something with it. So they said, you can have any information you want. All you have to do is come up with the questions. And after that, that's what I've done. I've come up with plenty of questions, and I've asked so much of all of this that I've been able to put together a very complete story of what is going on. And I think it is real because it has been repeated through hundreds and hundreds of clients. You got to remember, I've been doing hypnosis for 40 years. I've been doing the past life regressions for 30 years. I've done thousands and thousands of people. Now, with the UFO work, it's been hundreds because that's a different branch. But I'm still seeing some. I'm not seeing as many as I used to. It seems like things are changing right now. And in the next few weeks, I'm going to be going through more of my work. I'll be telling you a lot about the changes that are taking place. But one of the things they told me when they were working through these people, you see, the other investigators, when they are working with the person, they will keep them in the lighter levels to where they have the emotion and the fear of what happened or what they perceived happened. It may not be what really happened, but it's what they think happened. Sometimes they remember bits and pieces and snatches, or they remember dreams, and it's always frightening because it's going through the emotional part of their mind. The other investigators have told me they don't want to take them deeper like I do, because I work in the somnambulistic level. They said, we don't want to work in that part because if what we're getting is so bad, what are we going to find if we take them even deeper? I tried to tell them, you're going to find the truth because you get that conscious mind out of the way. They are working totally with that conscious mind. To get it out of the picture, then you can get to the truth. And this is what they, the ETs, that speak to me through the people I work with, they have said. They said the ideal situation would be that the person who is having the experience not remember anything at all. They have been coming to Earth since the beginning of Earth, since the beginning of the world. They've been taking care of us since the beginning of the world. And they've watched over us all of these thousands and thousands and eons of years. We're a project of theirs that they have to keep track of us and see what's happening. They've been taking care of us for all of those years. So they've been watching us. The ideal situation would be that the person not remember anything and continue on with their life because they do not want to disrupt the person's life. But they said the problem is that now, with the pollution we have in the air, with the additives we have in our food, if the person is on any kind of drugs, even prescription drugs, or if they are on, you know, regular illegal drugs, or if they're on alcohol, all of these things combine to change the chemistry of the brain. And they said when that happens, the person, if they remember bits and pieces of the experience or if they remember dreams, it will be colored by the chemical reactions because all of these things change the chemical reactions of the brain and they perceive it as a negative experience when actually it isn't. But this is the way the mind perceives it. They said, fear is the strongest emotion that a human has. And when they don't understand something, they bring in fear. This colors what they remember. And so there's a lot of, it's a lot there that is not really true. So in my method that I use, I take the person into the deepest possible level, the somnambulistic level, remove the conscious mind interference that's sitting there jabbering away, you know, that part, the one that you have when you're trying to do meditation and all these things, is the conscious mind is always wanting to be in there and be in control. Sits there and jabbers and says, oh, you're making this up. You saw it in a movie. You read it in a book. Yuck, yuck, yuck. That's the part that causes the problem. You get the conscious mind out of the picture. Go to this deeper level where the subconscious is, and that's also the level where the ETs can come through and talk. At that level, you could get what really is happening and what really is going on. So I put together the picture of what they have told me. And what I wanted to start tonight was start talking about the seeding of the planet Earth. And how we are their children, and they've been taking care of us since the beginning of the world. It's the seeding of the planet Earth. I've written about this in my books, The Keepers of the Garden, and then I continued on with it in the book, The Custodians. And it keeps coming up again and again in my work, even in the Convoluted Universe series, I keep getting mention of it through many different people. I'm not including a lot of it in Convoluted 3, but I'm thinking of accumulating all of that information with UFOs that I've gotten since the last books were written on that and putting it into a separate book. but I'm still getting the same information and the same story. And to me, that is adds validity if you can get the same story through many different people all over the world. If everybody tells you the same thing, then I think you can say it is true, it has validity. So let me start at the beginning, and we'll see how much I can get done tonight. All right. They said, in the very beginning, there are councils over everything. Just like Star Trek. Star Trek is not really fiction. It's fictionalized, but it is actually based on truth. So a lot of the concepts that you see in Star Trek are really there. The idea of councils is true. They have councils over the solar system. They have councils over the galaxy. They have councils over the universe. There are different levels to where they make the rules and the regulations that the different planets, the different species are supposed to abide by. This is very real. They have definite rules and regulations that must be adhered to, and they are very strict about this. That's why when people talk about these negative ones and, oh, how they're coming in here and doing all of these things, I say, no, it's not true because it's not allowed. There are definite rules and regulations that all species must abide by. They're not allowed into our world, into our atmosphere at all, unless they abide by these rules and regulations. Some of them do come in for various reasons, but they are watched and monitored to make sure they don't step over the rules that are placed down to them. And of course, you know, the main rule is the rule of non-interference. That is very real. You cannot interfere in a developing civilization. But in the very beginning, these councils keep track of all of the development on all of the planets in the entire universe, the ones in the different pecking orders, I guess you would say. First it's the solar systems, then it's the galaxies, then the universes. That's a big job. They have to make the rules and regulations and make sure that everything is abiding by it. Now, they said when a planet, they have the histories of every planet as it develops and the different jobs they've given to all the different groups that have to go out. When a planet reaches the point when it can sustain life, that is a very important time in the history of that planet, and it is duly noted in the history with the councils. At that time, the planet is given its life charter. When that happens, they have to decide what kind of life we will put on that planet. Now, this has been happening since the beginning of time, really. If they don't even recognize time, that's a little odd thing to say. But they said that we were seeded by the archaic ones. Very, very old. And they said they were doing it because that was where they came from. They were seeded in the very beginning also. And it just comes on down to where each group are expected to go through the galaxies, look for planets that are developing to the point they can sustain life, and then begin to seed that planet with life. These are jobs they have to do. Now, you know what's going to happen to us. With our curiosity, if we ever get to the point that we're going to be going out into space and looking at other planets and exploring, you know, if we find a planet that looks like it'll grow something, what do you think we're going to do? We're going to try. We're going to experiment. That's the human nature. This is the way it is, and they said this is the way it has been down through time. So whenever the Earth reached that point when it finally cooled down, because I've had people go to regressions when they were there at the very beginning, when the earth was volcanic eruptions, lava, the air was full of ammonia and toxic chemicals to where life could not possibly exist. And they had to wait until the earth cooled down, until the atmosphere cleared out enough that life would be able to be formed. And when that happened, then ships were monitoring this the entire time, because that's what they do. They go from place to place. But then when it finally reached that point, ships were sent in to start the seeding. And they said they bring cells. They start on the cellular level, a single-celled organism. Now, they have no idea what's going to grow. It all depends on the situation, the atmosphere, what chemicals are in the air, what is in the soil, what's in the water, all of these things, what we call the primeval soup, what the scientists call it. You have no idea what it's going to form. It all depends on what will grow in any type of an atmosphere and conditions. And they said you would have been surprised at what you could have looked like, because they have no idea what will grow. But they bring the first cells just to get something started. The idea is to get life started. They start with a single-celled organism, hoping that it will catch, it will begin to take root and grow, and then that single cell has to be able to multiply into a multi-celled organism, has to begin to multiply. If that happens, then they know they're on the way and that they, a life may be able to form in these certain places. I asked them one time, where do the cells come from? And they said it doesn't make any difference. They gather them throughout the universes, on different planets, on different worlds. They collect cells. They collect samples. They collect different life forms, animals, anything. And this was, they said, whatever will grow, it doesn't matter. And they can take combinations of cells to produce some kind of an organism. That's why there are so many different variations of life forms throughout the universes. And in my work, I've come across things you would not possibly believe, where souls have lived in these bodies in different parts of the galaxies, that what we would not consider to be alive doesn't matter. It was something that would exist on a different planet in a different type of circumstances. So anyway, they said if the organism will take hold and begin to multiply, that is tremendous, because they said you don't know how fragile life is. That a lot of places it would begin to grow, would begin to form into a multi-celled organism, and then it would fall apart, and the planet would be lifeless again. So to them, it is a great achievement when finally something begins to grow. Then they keep coming back and checking on it to see how it is developing and encouraging it along. In the new books, it's either in this one or the one I'm going to write about the next UFO stuff, they said there are three different groups that they call them. One is the seeders, the ones who actually plant these cells, the seeders, the seeds, and begin to get things growing. Then there are the planters, which go and transfer the different plants and things after they begin to grow, so they will spread out. They're more like tenders, planters, that take care of it once it begins to grow. Then, much later, they are the group that are called the recorders. They're the ones that come in and to see what is growing and what is not growing, and they keep records of all of these things. Now, they said in the beginning, there has to be water, and the water has to be exactly right with the chemicals in it so that life can form in the water. Then, when they get to where they'll have plants, they must have the right kind of things in the atmosphere so plants will grow. All of this has to be done before animal life or human life can even start. First, you have to have all the basics, the water and the plants. So they had to have many different types of plants that would grow first. I asked them one time, I said, this would have taken eons of time. And they said, only in your version of time, in your perception of time, because to them, time does not exist. They said, time is an illusion. And they said, mankind is probably the only species in the universe that has found a way to measure something that does not exist. I said, leave it to us to do something like that. But they aren't here all the time. They have different routes that they go to. They go to different planets and checking on the different things. So they have their orders to come back at different times and check on, see how the different things are going. In the beginning, they don't have anyone who lives there all the time. It's just a matter of plant it, see if it's going to take hold, and then watch it as it develops. But they did this over eons of time, and see, the ETs can live for thousands of years. They don't die like we do unless they are ready to go, unless there's an accident or something, and then they just clone a different body and enter the same soul can go back into a body looking just like the one they left. But a lot of them just disintegrate when they want to go. They just say, well, I'm tired of this. I'm going to go on to something else. They don't get sick, and they don't die the way we do, so they can live for thousands of years. So it's a different perception of time than we have. To them, they said they just do this. They just go from place to place, checking on things. But after you begin to get plant life, then you get into animal life. And they said a lot of the animals were brought from other planets, other galaxies. They collect these. Boy, that sounded like a terrible lightning. I don't know if you could hear that or not. They said sorry, it really scared me. It was so loud. It's a big burst of thunder. They said we're going to have a rain tonight, and then it will go into snow later on. That was so loud. I sure hope it doesn't cut us off the air. I'm sorry. I don't know if you could even hear it on here, but the whole house shook. What's happening here? Everything keeps following me around. Okay, now we get back to this other part. Okay, the animals are brought from different planets just again to see what will grow here. Some made it and some didn't. It just depends. And then as they develop, and this could take a long, long time, eventually, they came and they said, now we have to develop a human, an animal with intelligence. That's what we have to do next, is an animal with intelligence. So they took an animal, they figured it had to be an animal with a large brain, and it also had to have hands, so that it would be able to make tools, because this would be the next step. It had to be a manipulation, a way to create. So they took the ape because they said that was the one that had the largest brain capacity, and it would be able to develop. Now I've got a lot of rain starting. It seems so funny. Atari keeps distracting me because it's like everything is breaking loose right here. Okay, I've got glass skylights, and it sounds like the rain's coming right through the roof. Okay. I'll be able to finish this, I think. That's the trouble with a live show. You can't control the conditions, can you?
Okay.
But they took an animal, the ape, and they developed him by manipulating the brain and transporting the genes to develop into an animal that could think and eventually be able to make tools. And this went on for eons of time. And as these began to develop, then some of the ETs came and lived among the developing species. Every culture in the world has the legend of the culture bringer. They have the legends of the culture bringer. This is someone who comes either from the stars or from across the waters. And they always come to give them information. The Indians have their corn woman. All the other civilizations have these legends of someone who comes and shows them how to make fire, how to plant, how to grow, all the different things that they can do to develop. These are given to them as we go along. But they said, give this beautiful world an animal with intelligence and free will and see what he does with it. And they've been watching us the whole time just to see what will we do with it. And I don't think they're very pleased about it. But they can't interfere. They have to let the developing species make its own mistakes and see what it will do once given the gift of free will. Non-interference. So they said they came at various times and they gave them fire. They told them how to plant. They gave them many different things as they went along. And in the beginning, when these beings lived among the developing species, these beings were treated as gods because, as I said, they can live as long as they wanted to. And the other beings didn't know, so they treated them as gods, and the different legends have come up around this. Well, I asked them, I said, well, here you are giving them these things. Fire, planting, different things they needed as the civilizations were developing and growing. I said, isn't that interference? They said, no, that's a gift. We give it to them once as a gift and then see what they do with it. Because a lot of times they'll take something and turn it around and turn it into a negative or a weapon or something. But it was intended to be something that would help the developing civilization. They'll turn it around. And I said, well, couldn't you come back then and say you're not doing it right? This is the way you should be doing it. They said, no, because that is interference. You give them to it as a gift once. If they don't understand, if they make mistakes, that's they're using their free will, and we cannot interfere with that. That's the difference. So they let them develop, and it went along. They were beginning to, they also had interbreeding as they went along with this, and they did the manipulation of the genes, developing from the animal into finally human beings. It took a long time with all the manipulations of the genes, the interbreeding, to get a species that was going to be able to have intelligence, build cities, plant, do agriculture, eventually do inventions. The idea was in the very ultimate will be that we will join them and do what they are doing throughout the universes. They said we would be a very valuable addition to the federations because of our creativity and our curiosity. And they want us to be a part of this, but it has to all happen gradually to get us to that point. And that's what they've been working on all this time, developing, getting us ready. Now, in the beginning, we were supposed to have been a species that would never get sick, that would never die until it was ready to. We were supposed to be a perfect species. And it sounded very much like the Garden of Eden, to where everything was beautiful and perfect in the beginning. Like that was the way it was supposed to be. But then something unexpected happened that was they had not planned on. A meteorite hit the Earth right when all of these things were developing in the developmental stages. And this meteorite, when it hit the Earth, brought bacteria from somewhere else. And for the first time, disease was introduced into the developing species and on Earth. They say, the scientists say, there are three types of Earth of, they said, how did they say that? They said, the one part of all the species of Earth that does not belong is bacteria. It doesn't fit into any of the other categories. It's like, they know it came from somewhere else because everything else is interconnected cellularly in different ways to where it all matches in some way that the bacteria came from somewhere else. They know that. That is the alien part of Earth. But when this happened, it contaminated the developing species. And for the first time, disease was introduced. And they knew that their new species would not be the perfect one that they had intended. And they said when they went back and reported it to the councils, there was a great deal of sadness. They said, what do we do now? Do we stop the experiment and start all over again? Or do we allow it to continue the way it is, knowing it will never be perfect? It was decided to allow it to go ahead and continue because there had been so much time and so much effort invested in it that even though it would not be perfect, we would see what was going to happen. So they allowed it to continue, and they've been watching it all this time. Now, in the beginning, whenever new inventions and things were supposed to be there, they would live among the people and give it to them. At different steps in the time, whenever the new next advancement was supposed to be. But then when there got to be too many people and the world began to be populated more, they couldn't come and physically interact with them anymore. At that time, when it is time for a new invention or something that needs that the developing species needs at that time, the idea is put into the atmosphere. Now, it's done in this way so that anybody who can and who is sensitive to it will pick up the idea and develop whatever it's going to be. This explains why so many people all over the world are usually working on the same invention at the same time. They all receive the idea into their subconscious mind. Now, it doesn't matter who invents it as long as it is invented in the timeline that is necessary for the developing species. And this is where a lot of our inventions and everything have been coming from all this time. Because now that's the way it's being done it now. But a lot of people have asked me, how does God fit into all of this? They said, sounds like you're pushing God out of the picture. I said, no, I'm not. Because they say the God or the source is the one who told them to do this in the beginning. They are only the children carrying out the orders of the teachers, of the masters, of the one who is over them, the source. They are the children doing the work. And they were told to do this. And I asked them one time, what would happen if you just allowed life to just develop indigenously without manipulation or interference or the grooming and the way they've done it over the years. They said if it was allowed to develop indigenously, if it happened at all, it would be chaotic. It would not be a good form of life. And they said if you had been allowed to develop on your own, it would have taken many millions more years for you to reach this point of intelligence, if it would have happened at all. It always has to have a plan and have some kind of a force in there to manipulate and guide the cells of the species into the way it's supposed to go. And that is what they've been doing. But they are definitely under the rules and regulations of the councils, and God is very much into this picture. They call it the source because they are closer to the source than we will ever be, because they depend upon it for their very life. Without the source, they would die because they don't consume any food. They live off of light that is absorbed through their skin and through their body. Now, there are other types of species, but this is the main ones that I'm speaking to, live off of light, and it's absorbed in their bodies. And I said, well, where does the light come from? They said it comes from the source. And even on board the ships, they have where they take light baths, where the light is absorbed through the skin. This is what keeps them alive. They said they find us to be very humorous. This is why they like to study us, because they said there's three things about us that we are the different ones, not them. We're the ones that are different, and that's why they like to observe us and study us. Three things about us they find different and amusing, really. One is the fact that we consume food. Now, our scientists have even found out. Our scientists are working on this. They said there's two reasons why we grow old and we die. We eat and we breathe. They said if you can remove those two things, the human body would live forever. And they're working on it. Believe me, our scientists are. They're going to take all the fun out of everything. But the ETs have said that's one of the things that they find amusing and interesting, is that we consume food, because they said this is what eventually causes the body to die. Another thing they find fascinating is our way of procreation. They think it's very amusing. They said male and female is almost like two separate species. And they don't create in that way. A lot of them is done with cloning. A lot of it's done with thought. But they said we're almost like two separate species, male and female. And they just think it's very amusing. The third thing they find interesting is the fact that we die, because they don't die until they are ready to. They have complete control over their body. So we're the ones that are different. But people want to know, why are they coming? Why have there been these reports of abducting people and doing all these things? If you understood the reasons, it makes perfect sense. They said there has been so much time invested in the human species. They cannot let it perish. They said it must continue. It is very important. We're their children. They're not going to let anything happen to us. So they said they must preserve our species. So they are looking after us, and even in spite of us. So a lot of the sampling and everything is being done. When people report that they're on craft, they are taking cells, they are examining the cells, they are trying to understand what is happening to the human body. especially with the increase of cancer and the different diseases that are caused by the environment and our food. They're trying to understand what are we doing to ourselves. So they analyze these things, and they're trying to come up with cures. Because the idea is to get us back to that perfect species we were supposed to have been in the beginning, before the meteorite hit the Earth. To get us back to a species that would not get sick and would not die. They are trying to return it to that form. So they're trying, by the testing and the checking of the cells and these things that they do, the samplings, they are trying to find cures for diseases. These cures will be given to different scientists and doctors the same way that I told you before. It is either put into the atmosphere or it is put into the subconscious of different people. The idea will suddenly just occur to them for cures for diseases. And this is what they're concerned about. They want to make us into this perfect species. And they're going to do it in spite of ourselves anyway. So I have not found any negativity. When you understand what they are doing, makes perfect sense. The gathering of the eggs and the sperm, a lot of that is the ongoing project where they take to other planets and they're stored away in their laboratories because they're still developing life in its various forms on many other planets. And they take these, and for whatever combinations they can make, they will create life in the other places in the galaxies. It's an ongoing project. And they said, we may be the people who are so angry about these things, if only they would understand they may be responsible for the continuation of the human race. Maybe it would help them to understand it better. It's always the fact that people don't understand. That's where the fear comes in. When they understand what's really happening, what's really going on, it makes perfect sense because they've been taking care of us since the beginning of time. The keepers of the garden, they told me, why do people say we are here to take over the world? They said, it's ours. It always has been. They said, we can't do anything any worse to you than you do to yourself. So they're not here to harm us. They're here to try to help us. With our muddled way of thinking, we don't understand that. But this is the picture that I've been receiving through hundreds of people that I've had sessions with. They've told me the same story again and again. Is that we are the result of seeding, and it's going on throughout the galaxies on every planet that can sustain life. This life is introduced in one way or another. We will be a part of it ourselves as we move into this. And we are headed that direction to where they're finally waking us up that we're going to be a part of the whole picture. It's a very, very big picture. In the coming weeks, I'm going to try to go into some more of this, but it is bigger than anyone can imagine. It doesn't just boil down to a UFO here and there taking somebody, and they're scared because they don't know what's going on. It's much bigger than that. It is orchestrated in the councils, and it has a great deal of importance. That everyone involved in these things, if they understood their part, I think they would realize it's beautiful, and it's much bigger than they could have hoped for. But they will not harm you. They're not going to harm anybody deliberately. And I've had hundreds of these sessions, and whenever we go into it, then they come out of the session, and they'll say, oh, well, if that's what happened, I can live with it. Because it's not at all what they thought it was. They see it from a different light. Okay, we're coming down to the end of the hour now, and I've tried to cover as much as I can. There's a whole lot more here, but I'm going to try to continue in the next week, hopefully before we get to Christmas anyway. Then I'm going to start having some guests again. But I want you to remember, if you do want to take advantage of the pre-publication special on my new book, The Convoluted Universe Book 3, you can either call the office at 1-800-935-0045, 1-800-935-0045, or check my website. It has a whole lot in there about the pre-publication and how you can order online. The website is Ozark Mountain, OZARKMT.com. OZARKMT.com. Okay, so I'm hoping I can get off of here before this lightning and thunder comes back again and see what we're going to find in the morning when I wake up, if we're going to be snow covered. All right, everybody, and thanks for listening, and good night.